Success isn't given, it's earned. And earning it means becoming the person who deserves it. The bottom line is where we cut through the chaos to simplify success, uncovering the strategies, mindset, and resilience it takes to win. Real stories, expert insights, and practical tools. Because the only way to the top is by putting in the work. This is The Bottom Line.
Welcome to The Bottom Line. I'm your host, Ryan Herpin, and today we're diving into a challenge many business professionals face but don't always know how to fix. Your personal brand might be the reason you're stuck. You're talented. You're hardworking, but it feels like no one sees your full value. Maybe you're overlooked for promotions, passed up for clients, or simply not getting the respect your work deserves. And that leaves you wondering, what am I doing wrong? Often the answer lies in your personal brand, how others perceive you when you're not in the room. Today, we're going to talk about how to take control of the perception that everyone has of you, right? And transform this into a powerful advantage. I'm thrilled to have an incredible guest joining me in this conversation, Leslie Everett, an internationally recognized keynote speaker, executive branding expert, and the author of 3 books on this subject. Leslie is the CEO of Walking Tall Training and Consultancy Incorporated, and she's coached leaders in over 28 countries. Leslie, it is a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Ryan. It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to dive right in. I like to get to the bottom line of matters so we can add as much value as possible to our viewers. What are the biggest mistakes people make when it comes to their personal brand?
Yeah, great question to start, because a lot of people fall into the same traps with this. And, you know, I always say your brand is there already, whether you've consciously developed it or not. So it's easy just to leave it to chance and not do anything about it. But of course, as we know, we've heard it a lot, that your brand is what people say about you when you've left the room. It's what they say about you behind your back, as I often like to say. So it's there already. So the biggest mistake is that people just leave it to chance. They don't have time, perceived time. They don't have the perceived time. There's little commitment to it because it's, well, what good does it do? I'm doing a great job anyway. And they're just not, they don't apply strategy to it, and they don't build it into their everyday life. But really, if we think about it, our brand is what gets us noticed, lets people know who we are, what we do, and what we're great at. And without taking it under our control and building it consciously, we're really leaving it to chance. So I think that's the first thing. The other mistake that's often made is that people believe that a personal brand is being highly visible on social media and that's it. So this sort of fire hose approach to it, if I get posts out every single day on Instagram and Facebook and Meta, as we should call it, and LinkedIn and X, it's fine because my brand is building. People see me all the time. But the mistake they make is that it's not consistent. It's not in alignment with any one line, with any one particular topic of your brand. So people are just confused as to what it is that you do. So a couple of mistakes there that people make, which are very common.
You know, I've got to echo some of the things that you said, because it's funny, now that you say it, I see it so frequently. There's that fire hydrant approach. Yeah. You bust the fire hydrant open and it's just all this content, all this information, all these opportunities for people to see you. But what is the strategy? What are you wanting them to truly understand about you? What's the narrative you want to control? How do you want people to perceive you? Life is about perspective. Business is about perspective. When it's funny, because in my line of work as well, it's all about strategy. Doesn't matter what it is. You've got to have a strategy, a plan. And building your personal brand, it needs a strategy. Same with anything else. You can rapid fire from the hip, but are you going to get the results you want? So how can someone take control of their brand and position themselves for success?
Yeah, I mean, strategy is a great starting point, but a strategy without actions is just a plan on paper. So we've got to have the strategy to start with. Then we've got to be committed to putting in the actions. And I think just going back to what you said and the fire hydrant approach, you know, we have to be so careful of that, because with AI now as well, I see it all the time and I cringe. I can see an AI created post a mile off, as a lot of us can, and it does nothing to your brand. So we've really got to get rid of that and start to build, as you say, that strategy and the action plan. So the point is, I think, first of all, with any plan, I think you need to make sure you know what your goal is. So what is your goal for your business or your career? What is that next step? If we're really clear and we articulate that, and I can cover that at some point as well, a great structure for a goal. If we're really clear and we really know when we want to achieve that by and what the reasons are for that, achieving that goal in our career, in our personal development, then we can start to be clear about what the actions are and we can be committed to those actions. So the first thing is we've got to make sure we know what the goal is. Then we need to say, right, every day, what are the small things I can create, the habits I can put in place to actually build towards my goal? And I actually have this great analogy that I often use when I'm presenting, like a pearl in an oyster, because a pearl in an oyster grows organically every single day as layers get added to it and it gradually evolves. And that's exactly the same as our brand or our reputation. Layers get added with everything we do. So we need to consciously build those layers rather than just let them happen to chance. So the start of a day is building those habits. How am I going to add the right layers to today?
My goodness, I feel like I should be taking notes because you're speaking my language. I've got to bring up a few things you said that are absolute gold, and it's wisdom that people should not overlook. So I recommend viewers need to grab a pen and pad and write this stuff down. This is valuable because it's simple. Vision, clarity, understanding, seeing the steps, seeing the milestones, seeing the process, and being intentional with your actions. I couldn't have said it better myself, honestly. I think you highlighted the underlying reason why a lot of things fail, not just with someone's personal brand, but for their business, their life. It's you gotta have a good plan. But the one thing you said that is so important is action with consistency, right? So
Yes.
what are the first three steps someone should take to strengthen their professional image?
First three steps really are to make some time so that I'm a great believer in what's the smallest thing you can do to get towards the end goal, and that is to create some time in your calendar. You sit down and you think about at this point in my career, what is it that really drives me, that motivates me? What is a true value to me? And I think a lot of leaders and business owners today don't spend enough time thinking about and clarifying what it is that I truly stand for. What is it I'm really great at? What's the end result of what I actually do for my clients? And then it's sort of so it's really getting to the heart of the authentic core of the individual. Spend some time doing that. Get some feedback on that. Absolutely key, because we may think we're the best thing, we may think this is what I do and people know that, but unless we get the feedback, we don't know how much of out of alignment we are, and the perceptions could be very different. I talk about perception gaps, so get the feedback. Ask people to, for example, to give you, I don't know, three words that for them describe who you are and what your brand is. Ask them to describe how they felt when they first met you. Ask them to tell you how they describe you to other people if they're recommending you. Then ask them what behavioral traits might I change that might support my brand better. If you give people very specific things to think about, they'll come up back with some really valuable feedback. And then you can map that feedback over the brand that you've started to think about that really is the authentic you. And from that, the third piece is really create what your differentiator actually is. From all of that, how do you do your job so differently to the next HR director or the next CPA or whatever it is your business is, or the next realtor? How do you do your job so differently because you use your experiences, your expertise, your own DNA, your own backstories? Use those to make it personal to you that makes you stand out from the crowd. The differentiator is the key thing. And that doesn't that, that that's not easy. That's not a quick process. So there's three key things there we can start with.
My goodness, you're a breath of fresh air, honestly. It's so great to hear how you break that down. And you also highlight the fact that it's not an instantaneous thing. It's not an overnight success type deal. It's a process, right? So I've got to ask because this is something I use in business all the time, and that's that open feedback loop. It can be anonymous too, especially when measuring leaders and department managers. at any stage of business, especially executives, get the feedback of what your team thinks of you. So I want to ask your opinion. How valuable is that anonymous loop of feedback? How can it be critical in someone's growth?
And you use the word there, it is critical. And a lot of companies that I work with and teams that I work with, the higher up, the worse it is, there's not really a feedback culture, or people aren't comfortable giving feedback. You know, it says, well, I need to be careful what I say, or I better not give the honest feedback because that could affect my career. And a lot of the time when I'm working with leaders, executives, middle managers, people coming into leadership as well, I talk about creating a really positive feedback culture, and I give them some techniques to do that. Because without that, we really can't grow as a team. You can't build that collaboration. You can't build your brand in a team if you don't know what people are really saying about you behind your back. So a positive feedback culture is absolutely something that every company and every team should build to support individuals' development and personal brand, and the ultimate success of the business, of course. That's what we're talking about here.
It's crazy to me how many businesses out there are just not open to constructive criticism or feedback really of any kind. It seems almost taboo in a lot of the businesses I've dealt with, where if they could just have the feedback, they'd have all the answers they need. They'd have all the information they are seeking that can strengthen weaknesses, fill gaps, and make the difference. I also think it's good to highlight, it sounds like during this process, people have to become comfortable with that constructive criticism. They have to be willing to accept the information and make the adjustments. It's got to be objective-based, right? If we have this objective to be seen this way, to be heard this way, to be thought of this way, we have to be willing to change even when it sucks. So I like the way that you put this, because it's not always the softest approach. Sometimes it's, you just got to do the work even when it's uncomfortable. So to our viewers, if you're enjoying this conversation like I am, go stretch, refill your coffee, grab a pen and a pad, because we're going to be right back on The Bottom Line.
This is The Bottom Line.
We are back on The Bottom Line with the legendary Leslie. I want to shift the focus to something we've all experienced: struggling to gain trust in business. Sometimes we don't realize that our personal brand might be working against us. I've seen this time and time again with different businesses, but I want to dig into Leslie's massive experience to understand what we can do. So Leslie, thank you again for being on the show. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, Ryan.
So once again, we're going right to the bottom line. Let's get all that value we can. What are the key signs that someone's personal brand is hurting their credibility?
Number one, lack of consistency. Absolute lack of consistency. I mentioned it previously, and it's that getting so much stuff out on social media that's not meaningful to your brand. And it's like, is she a leadership coach? Is she a sales coach? Is she a realtor, or is she an investment consultant? Or, you know, what is it that person does? So lacking credibility absolutely is in alignment with that lack of consistency, because people don't know who you are and what you do, and you seem to be varying your place, your positioning around, and your values aren't clear. People don't know what you stand for and who you really are, and therefore it's just too difficult in their heads. They don't do this consciously, but subconsciously it's too difficult in my head to really understand who that person is. So that's a key thing in lacking in credibility, where you can lose credibility for sure, and it can hurt and stop you getting those opportunities for exposure and next step level promotions and new jobs and exposure externally, for example. So, you know, consistency is number one, really.
I love the way you put that, and I've got to highlight some additional information that I think just adds on to that, because my goodness, this is powerful. And something that I talk about with a lot of my clients is, you know, personal brand. When you think of that, some people are going to think this big business oriented thing that is strictly tailored to how they see it, and they believe other people are going to see exactly what they want them to. Your personal brand is heavily impacted by your small little actions, the things that you do or the things that you don't do. A great example is your integrity is your credibility in a lot of ways. If you show up late to a meeting, that's impacting your personal brand. It really is. And all those little things, the way you communicate, the way you send an email, passive aggressive emails, that can become part of your personal brand.
Oh,
So
yes.
it's critical to really be cognizant of what every little thing can do, right? So how does communication style really impact how much people trust and respect you?
Yeah, that communication style is absolutely critical, and you've touched on that very much, whether it's a voicemail message, a text, a WhatsApp message, a presentation, a meeting, an email, how you start and finish emails. I've seen so many damaged relationships by communication style not being in alignment with perhaps who they think that person is. So the abruptness, or in the meeting saying, rather than saying, yeah, I think that's not going to work. That's really going to take too much time. That's a ridiculous idea. It's like, well, just to phrase that a little bit differently, perhaps there's a way to do this with a little bit more haste, and because I think this may take a while to do in this setup. So it's the language we use rather than being direct and blunt and aggressive as it can come across. It's how we position it. It's the same thing. It's not about not being direct and clear. It's about saying what we mean, but actually being a little bit softer with it in a more open approach. There can be a world of difference between those two different approaches. And as you say, that can be very damaging to our credibility and our brand, and that's what gets talked about. Key thing is how we're making people feel. That's what communication is really all about. So if we're making somebody feel embarrassed or small in a meeting because we've talked over them or talked down an idea that they've got, then they're going to feel terrible. And our brand has really sunk in their opinion. That's going to then build potentially, it ripples out. They tell other people how they feel about us, and it gradually grows. So, communication style is so important. We've got to really get feedback on that.
I would have to agree. And based on what you said, it sounds like communication style is one of the major key points of how people interpret you, how they respect you, and whether or not they trust you. And it reminds me of some previous business partners of mine that I worked with. They mentored me and guided me. And they were two very different people. One was very intense, very blunt, very harsh, and sometimes quite vulgar. I even have a list of the sayings he would say because they're absurd. But the other partner was very calm, strategic, collected, kind, but would deliver what he had to say with a massive amount of brevity. So it was two very different styles in the way that people would interact, communicate, and the way they interpreted them were completely different. It's almost like good cop, bad cop, but very unintentional. So it just made me think of that, where that communication style can really set the tone for how people see you. So, what are the habits of highly trusted leaders that anyone can start using today?
Yeah, I spend most of my time working with leaders, of course. And it's first of all, it's saying what you mean and doing what you say you're going to do. Those are two absolutely key things for leaders today. We want to take people with us as well as a leader. And a leader, as you well know, Ryan, is not about having people report to you, and it's not about headcount. Being a leader is about making impact and having people choose to follow you. And if people choose to follow you, then that's because they believe in you. They understand you. They understand you as a person. And if your brand is pretty direct and let's get things done, as long as people understand who you are and you're not rude and abrupt with it, that's okay. It might not be my style, but I get that. That's your style. And I understand who you are as a person, and you're consistent with that. So those are a couple of things. Being clear about the values, I think, is a really important piece. Bill George wrote the book called Authentic Leadership, and he wrote in there about successful leaders and what makes them successful. And one of the key things, and I would absolutely agree with this with the work I've done over the last 25 years or so, is that they are crystal clear what they stand for and their values. Then they are transparent with those values. So they take people with them effectively, and then they don't compromise on those values. And that can be tough, but at least if we know what our values are, we know when we're being compromised. And I think other things are that I that there are a ton of things that go to making a good leadership style, good leader, but I think listening, really listening. A lot of leaders I work with think they listen well, but they don't really. And the higher up I work, the more challenging it is to give feedback, because there's always a reason why that's been done. So that can be challenging. So listening, actively listening, taking on board what people are saying, repeating it back to them so you've fully understood that, and an open communication style. And I think the other thing is humility. I come across this an awful lot. It's okay to say that you failed at something, 10 years ago in your career, you made a big mistake. Let's look at what I did. Let's look at how I learned from that. Not having the perception that you've always done everything great to get to where you are. Humility is a huge thing. Humility and empathy are really important styles for a leader to develop their leadership brand effectively, and executive brand, as I talk about a lot.
I feel like that deserves a round of applause, if I'm being honest. I mean, you just highlighted all the same things I believe of what makes a good leader, a trusted leader, right? And habits are a big part of that. And when I think about it from 10,000 feet, you've got to lead by example. You've got to set the example. Your expectations for your team, you've got to model that. So that means, just as you said, if I'm paraphrasing here, it's do what you say. Be open, transparent, have humility, be willing to show your faults, show you're human, show that you fall short too, but choose to keep moving forward. But at the same time, you're also someone that genuinely cares about holding accountability and keeping everyone feeling supported, right? I feel like there's a lot that can
So
easily be
important.
missed there. So I'm curious, why do you do this? Where do you find that fulfillment in this pursuit?
Is as me as a coach, or as a leader?
As a coach.
As a coach, I absolutely love it when I can work with leadership teams that allow me to absorb myself into their culture and help work through. So my favorite clients are always the ones where I can be on a journey with them. So for example, what I'm working with at the moment, a sales growth team, 70 odd people on the journey, coaching the executive leader and all of the VPs and some of their teams with workshops and things, and I can get right engrossed into that. And the driver for me is I'm very much a people person, so I love to get to know people. The coaching allows that, and it's also how I can see a difference. When I can see a difference in the work that I do with that entire team of leaders and shift them from one point to the next alongside the leader, executive leader I'm working with, together we can dovetail our skills, and I can see that shift in culture to a real growth mindset. That's what gives me real satisfaction and fulfillment. Nothing better than that. So I think people's development and seeing potential in people and getting them, helping them to reach that. It's one of my biggest fears in life with my business, and for me personally, is about not reaching potential. And okay, we're probably never going to reach what we're really capable of, but it's a fear for me, it's not reaching potential. So I think that's my key driver. And if I can get people to think about what they really want out of life, whatever that is, in their work, in their careers, and help them to get there and be motivated and inspired to take some actions, then that's what's in it for me.
I think anybody could learn from that answer there, because it's a deeper thing than a financial gain.
Oh,
And
yeah.
it sounds to me, which I would not expect anything less, your pursuit is fulfillment, servitude, and execution of purpose, right? It's not the financial gain that you're after, and that's a byproduct of serving your
Yeah.
purpose, but you like seeing the positive impact you can create. You like knowing that what you've said, what you've done, has helped somebody else. And I find that extremely admirable. Don't go anywhere. This conversation is not over. There's so much more, Leslie, to get through. Stick with us. We will be right back on the bottom line.
This is the bottom line.
We are back again on the bottom line, and I want to continue this incredible conversation with Leslie. Now, what I want to target now is more about visibility. In a crowded, noisy business world, it's easy to feel like you're blending in, right? There's so many people out there. So how do we become the person others instantly remember?
So much to say on that for sure. First thing, I'm just going to reiterate something I said before. For people to remember us, to make an impact in people's lives, we have to think about how we make them feel. And of course, our brand is wrapped into that. How we make them feel when we communicate with them, when we share information, when we work with them, whatever it is. And also how we differentiate ourselves. That's a key thing I mentioned before. So pulling that out, understanding what it is we really do as an end result of the work that we do, the experience we've got, the expertise we've got, the person we are, that's a key element as well. That's how we really do stand out when we're in a competitive environment. It's how we differentiate and how we make people feel. So I've got some techniques that I can share on how we might differentiate ourselves, or one particular one if you'd like me to share that.
Please, please, I would love it.
It's a longer exercise than we have time for here, but I think people don't know how to do that. So the feedback is obviously important. But if we really think about one exercise we can do is to think about a drill. When we go into a hardware store and we buy a drill, we're not buying the drill as such. We're buying what the result of the drill is, so what the drill gives us. So it's the hole in the wall or the shelves to put the family photos on. Those are the things that we're buying. And if we really think about that and apply that to our own expertise, our own profession, and what it is that the end user gets as a result, it can be quite a simple piece. Then we really start to define what our lane is and what our differentiator is. So that's something that is not an easy exercise to sit down and do. But what is the problem you solve for people? What's the cause of the problem that they've got? What does it cost them by having that problem or that challenge? And then your solution is at the bottom of that. And that's the hole in the wall piece from the drill. So it's a fun exercise to do, to sit down when you've got some time, to share it with somebody who knows your business really well and see if you can come up with what your equivalent of the hole in the wall is.
That is very interesting. I've never really looked at it from that perspective before. Now you've got me wondering, okay, how can I apply that to me? What can I think about my firm and what the end result really is there, right? I think there's a lot of power in doing that because you're giving a whole different perspective on the value we bring. And when I feel like when you can really understand and maximize the value you bring, that's the easiest way to stand out in a competitive market. It really is. It's not always the people that scream the loudest that get noticed. A lot of the time, it boils down to the people that get the best results consistently. That's so valuable and it's misunderstood. You know, you've got a lot of businesses and people that great at marketing, really terrible at execution. So you might market the business well, market the product well, but are you really giving the value that you're marketing? Right. So I like to live by this concept of undersell and overdeliver. It sets
Absolutely.
the tone for expectation, right? And then always trying to go above and beyond what I tell a client. I'm loving this. I want to ask another question and get a little bit more into the brand and making it a little more unforgettable. How can professionals and entrepreneurs craft their brand to make it unforgettable?
Okay, so once they have that platform, they're clear about what they stand for, who they are, what the differentiator is, then we've got to build a plan, a visibility plan around that. And of course, there's various areas, elements that we can use to do that, or platforms we can use. And often this is where the introverts get a little uncomfortable. Visibility, I don't really want to be out there all the time and networking and being on every podcast that I can. There are other ways to be visible and keep yourself memorable. And often one of the simplest things is by being interested in other people makes you a more interesting person that gets talked about. So what we're really aiming for is being talked about. But we do have to work at it as well. Even the introverts out there need to work at building that presence. So it's having the strategy. So what is my lane? What are the key things that my brand and my differentiator that I need to get out there? Every social media post you go goes out, whether it's reposting somebody else's post, whether it's creating a post or an article of your own, has to be in alignment some way with that differentiator. If you're reposting, don't just repost. I think that damages credibility. Don't just repost somebody else's post. Put something in there with to re when you repost it, post your own words that links back to something that you want to be well known for. and have a be consistent with your posts. Don't just leave it 6 months and do six, you know, one a month if that's what you want to do. Think about ways of being out there more so that people know you in your industry. Often I say to people, get great at presenting. I think that's another thing, it's being unforgettable. People love it when someone presents really well. And I do believe it's a critical factor in getting ahead in business and in your career, to be able to land a message with impact in a compelling and engaging way that people go away and take some action with. That's a craft. So I think being unforgettable is, and building the brand, you have to be able to present a message really well. Maybe look at how you can present outside of your industry, to schools, to the community. Get on panels at conferences. Share that knowledge around the differentiator again. And just have a visibility plan. Again, a strategy that you talked about before, Ryan, having a strategy. But then you've got to put the actions in place to make a difference every day.
Yeah, I think there's a consistent common denominator here. If we're really looking at it, it's plan. Have a plan and then execute intentionally. Take action intentionally, right? You know, it's funny because there's a lot of people that, like I said before, they just spray from the hip and hope something lands and hits. But if you're moving with intention and an objective, right? So when building your personal brand, you have to have an objective in mind. Just like we talked about before, and I love that it's repeating itself, because that's what really matters. It makes sense. You've got to have that plan. You've got to be able to move in accordance with it and think strategically with how people are gathering information on you. And like you said about reposting, and that's I could not agree with you more. I think it can break down credibility. It can definitely prevent people from getting the message that you want to get out there. Having that consistency, even if it is once a month, like you said, still having consistency and intentionality in what you're doing is how you build that brand that people don't forget. It's vital, 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 vital. And
I think just
definitely
to
are highlighting this really well. So what small but powerful shifts can someone make to instantly be seen as an authority?
I think it's certainly building on those. Having being interviewed on podcasts is a great thing to do. People might be uncomfortable with that, but just hone your message. Putting yourself out there for these presentations, putting yourself in uncomfortable situations that you can get comfortable being in by planning and preparing. But that helps you to really hone your message. I remember one thing that I did years and years ago that's always stuck with me, and I've done it a lot since, is when my son's teacher, when he was about 7 or 8 years old, about that age, wanted me to go in and talk to them about branding and about the work that I do. And I said, yeah, of course I will. And then it got closer to the date and I was planning it and thinking, how do I interpret this for 7, 8, 9 year olds or whatever? And it really pushed me to think about what it is I actually do that is in an understandable way. That's actually not just great for kids, but for adults to understand as well. So put yourself in those positions, because it really tests your articulation of what it is that you do. I mean, writing a book is really, it's a great thing if you can do that. That's really going to set you up as an authority. And maybe it's something we talk about a lot more, is this thought leadership piece. Yeah. But having that as a basis, how do I become a thought leader in this space? It's having those expert opinions on your industry, not always copying other people's stuff, not always just sharing what they say or agreeing, but having your own take on things. That's how you build your own executive and leadership brand and personal brand, whatever level you're at, is by being that authority in that space that you're in. So own it, have your own thoughts and your insights into the work that you do there, and just build on it, get it out there all the time, however you can, using social media, podcasts, presenting, in a book, whatever works for you.
It's so funny because you just so eloquently and simply put forth kind of the plan that even I've utilized to grow my authority as fast as possible. And it took me so long to figure out what to do. So a great example is I co-authored a book, and then I used that to help get me positioned to be on television and then have my own show. Using that, now I'm writing other books and doing other things. But you're right, getting on podcasts, writing a book, putting yourself, I like to say it like this, backing yourself in the theoretical corner. So you have nowhere else to go but forward. Put yourself in the uncomfortable situation that requires you to master your craft, show your skills, and test your ability. And it ties back to a belief of mine. If you're not uncomfortable, you're not growing.
That's right.
And it's so crazy that you simply put the strategy that took me so long to figure out. So with how powerful this conversation is, where can our viewers find you?
Thank you. Yes, the best place, actually, to be honest, is LinkedIn. And we can maybe talk about LinkedIn a bit more. But my LinkedIn profile has got my newsletter on there, which is all about integrated executive branding that I talked about, the executive and the entire team that helps to lift the brand of the leader. So LinkedIn is great. And also my website as a speaker, which is leslieeverett.com. And Leslie is spelled Lesley. And then the Walking Tall training site is walkingtall.org. So those would be the key areas and places to find me.
This has been such an enlightening and powerful conversation. I appreciate you so much for being on the show and sharing this incredible insight and knowledge and experience that you've gathered over the years. And like I said, it's such a pleasure having you here. I hope I get to have you on the show again. It's so much fun. So don't go anywhere. We've got one more segment to go. And I want to dive into some of my own personal experiences and some of my own perspectives on the matter of personal branding. We'll be right back on The Bottom Line.
This is The Bottom Line.
We are back on The Bottom Line. We have covered a lot today. And here's what it all comes down to. Family law isn't just about paperwork. It's about people. It's about protecting what matters most when your life feels uncertain. It's such a nice pleasure to have Thomas join us and to go over some of those major points and to really understand how things could be rather than how things are in a lot of times, right? It kind of gives a breath of fresh air for me. My understanding of the process has improved, and the way that I see a family law attorney has changed. I think there's a lot more than I anticipated on the side of being able to navigate the courtroom setting, to be able to navigate the code that people are dealing with. But I want to dive back into the personal side of it, right? With a little mixture of some of the information that we were able to get from Thomas, because there's a lot of value there. And family law isn't just about courtrooms. It's about real people going through real pain, right? When you hear the term family law, our minds often go straight to courtrooms, documents, and judges. But at its core, family law is about people. It's about real families going through some of the most emotionally charged moments of their lives. Divorce, custody battles, and disputes over the future of the relationships, the homes, the children. Behind every case file is someone lying awake at night worried about what comes next. And I think Thomas did a great job of helping us understand that your legal representation can completely change the experience for you. Instead of just feeling like you're fighting this battle alone, you can truly feel like you've got somebody in your corner that's ready to fight the battle with you. I think there's a lot of power in that, but that's why this work really matters. It's not just legal, it's deeply human. And if we want to do justice to the people at the heart of these cases, we have to remember that what happens in those courtrooms affects lives, mental health, relationships, and even how the children grow up. It's personal, and it has to be treated that way. Legal experience matters because your future depends on how today's challenges are handled, right? And in today's world, you know, we see this constant rise and consistency of divorce and all these types of battles and people getting together but not staying together. I don't know the true statistics, but I think it's pretty safe to say almost half of marriages don't make it past 5 years. From my experience alone, I see a lot of people get married and they're not together in 10 years. That's scary. It's a shame, but that's current culture. The truth is, not all lawyers are created equal. And in family law, experience isn't just helpful. It's essential. When your emotions are high and the stakes are even higher, you need someone who can really bring the calm to the chaos, right? You want someone who's been through it already. Someone who knows what to expect, what to avoid, and how to get you from chaos to resolution without any unnecessary damage along the way. Now, we can talk about this till I'm blue in the face, but the reality is, it can be messy very quickly. And without the right representation, it's going to be a very hard, rocky road. The decisions made today, whether in meditation or a court, can impact your life for years to come, financially, emotionally, and even in how your relationships unfold after the legal process ends. You know, depending on how custody battles go, the relationship with the father or the mother can vastly change for the children. That's one thing that's easily overlooked, right? Experience really helps navigate that complexity. It ensures that the strategy fits the situation and that no detail is overlooked. You're not just hiring a lawyer, you're hiring wisdom, foresight, and protection for your future. I think that's very it's key. It's key to understand that there's so much more weight to this than just let's get through documentation, let's get through the court process, let's find our way to move forward. It's more than just that, because everything that happens is going to change your life for a very long time. The right attorney can make the difference before really between chaos and clarity. And I want to dig into this a little bit more, because in a family law case, the situation is already painful. There's uncertainty, mistrust, and fear of what might happen next. But a skilled and compassionate attorney can change the energy entirely. And I have brought this up several times. I just want to keep bringing this up in different ways, because that is how you should be choosing your family law attorney. Yes, obviously, you know, there's as Thomas brought up before, the reviews, right? You want to be able to know that who you're working with consistently shows up, executes, communicates well, and does their job with intention, strategy, and a level of excellence, right? But the fact is, you've got to find somebody that's going to be able to minimize the damage of the situation and completely change the energy of the whole thing and how it impacts everybody involved, right? They bring order to disorder, structure to uncertainty. They help you see the road ahead and walk it with purpose instead of panic. You know, I'd like to think, you know, if I was ever in a situation like this, I would handle it really well. But truth is, I wouldn't know until I'm in it. And I'm very, very blessed that I don't see a reality where I'd have to go through that. Anything can happen, but you know, the right attorney doesn't just handle the legal side, they help stabilize the emotional side. They explain your opinion in plain English. They set expectations and they make sure you feel heard. That kind of clarity is powerful. And when you're going through something difficult, clarity becomes a lifeline. It really does. It's just like within business, right? Tying that over into a field that I am so very heavily involved in, it's what I do for a living. When dealing with clients, clarity becomes. It becomes a sense of peace. It can create peace. It can raise hopes. It can break down walls. It can remove stress. It can make all the difference. Having that level of clarity. So it's just like finding the right family attorney, finding the right consultant. It's the same kind of thing. You want someone that understands the emotional side, the complexities of the stress of business, trying to find the right rhythm of home and life and work. It's very, very similar. So for me, one of the biggest things I like to do when I first jump in with a client is, okay, let's find out your goals. Let's understand the direction you want to go, what your end goal is, your exit strategy. Then let's talk about all the problems you're dealing with right now, the reality, the good, the bad, the ugly. Don't hide any truths. We take that information, we make a plan, create clarity, a roadmap. It's just like taking a vacation, right? You don't just hop in the car and drive off any direction. No, you decide the destination. You plan what you're going to do to get there. And then, you know, nowadays, you know, we don't use maps as often. We just get on our phone, use GPS, right? It's mapping the way out and to get there, right? It's the same thing. That clarity is what brings a level of certainty and confidence and peace to the situation. It can remove stress. But back to the family law attorney and kind of how this really works out and how it can help us. Strategic negotiation and courtroom strength aren't luxuries. They're necessities. This plays a big part of finding the right family law attorney. A great attorney isn't just someone who understands the law. They are someone who knows how to leverage it to protect you. They need to know how to negotiate when it makes sense and how to go to court when it doesn't, right? Strategic thinking, preparation, and courtroom strength aren't bonus features. They are essential tools in protecting your interests. Like I said before, this is whoever you choose is going to have a massive permanent effect on your future. That's just reality. It can change everything. So my perspective, if I was in the situation, I certainly would not cheap out on that type of thing. There's a lot of things we can cut corners on. That's not one of the ones I would choose. Too often people think they need to lawyer up only when things get ugly. But the truth is, strategic counsel can often prevent things from getting ugly in the first place. And when the courtroom does become inevitable, having someone who can command respect in that space, it can completely shift the outcome. Don't settle for someone who's just qualified. Find someone who's capable, strategically, technically, and ethically, right? Empowerment comes from preparation. Know what to ask and what to expect. There's a process I go through when dealing with businesses, and this kind of works in life as well. Something we perceive as luck, right? You can get lucky. Definitely, you can get lucky, win the lottery. But I think of luck as something a little bit different. Luck is an equation, at least what a lot of people call luck, right? It is preparation mixed with attitude, mixed with opportunity, plus action. That is what a lot of us perceive as luck, and preparation is a major key in that, right? Preparation sets you up. You are ready for the opportunity. The right attitude prepares you to capitalize on it. And then taking action is extremely important. And that's what a lot of us see as luck. But when people don't know the process, they feel powerless. And that's understandable. This isn't something most people plan for, but empowerment begins with education. If you're facing a family law issue, take the time to prepare, learn the basics, know what to expect, and most importantly, know what to ask when you do meet with an attorney. Questions like, what's your approach to cases like mine? How do you communicate during the process? What outcomes are realistic for my situation? Preparation gives you confidence, and confidence helps you think clearly and make stronger choices during a time when every decision matters. Empowerment doesn't mean having all the answers. It means knowing how to find them and who to trust to guide you there, right? You don't have to face those challenges alone. There is help out there. Just I hope this episode today helps you find the right person, right? Hiring the right attorney means hiring someone who not only knows the law, but knows how to stand beside you when stakes are personal. So here's the challenge. If you're facing family law issue, don't settle for who's available. Do the work. Ask the questions. Choose someone who brings experience, strategy, and integrity to the table. Thank you again for joining us on The Bottom Line. I'm Ryan Herpin, and remember, success isn't given, it's earned. I'll see you next time on The Bottom Line.
This has been a Now Media Networks feature presentation. All rights reserved.